Outkick the coverage with Clay Travis live every weekday morning from 6 to 9 a.m. Eastern, 3 to 6 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for Outkick the coverage at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every morning on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR.
Now let's get this party started.
You're listening to Fox Sports Radio.
I'm back here Tuesday, as I told you to start off the show, because I was at WrestleMania 37 down in Tampa on Sunday night, and I traveled back on Monday, and it was an awesome time. Sitting ringside, seeing how athletic all these different performers were. My wife has been a longtime WWE fan. She was at WrestleMania 3 as a And she was as big of a fan as you can imagine at, you know, 6, 7, 8 years old then. She still had her Ricky the Dragon Steamboat shirt. And so we were sitting ringside for WrestleMania, right where everybody walks down the ramp, for those of you who watch WrestleMania. And by the way, I understand some of you don't, but I think wrestling is wildly entertaining. If you got young kids, they often love it. And it was cool to be in a ruckus atmosphere like that, 25,000 fans, the last event they had inside of the Tampa Bay Stadium there was the Super Bowl that Tom Brady and crew won. And so that was just an awesome experience to get to see fans coming back in big numbers, 25,000 there. And I think, honestly, given the fact that the reports are that by April 19th, basically any adult in any state is going to be able to have a COVID vaccine appointment. If you want to get your vaccine, and if you want to then be in the crowd, or if you're not willing to get a vaccine, but you want to be in the crowd and you're willing to take that risk, I think we got to get back to full crowds inside of full stadiums sooner rather than later. I know they're already doing it in Texas, but I'm perfectly fine with being in a crowded stadium myself. I understand if some of you are not, but I don't think that some people's fears should dictate the choices and freedoms of other people at this point in time. I think it's gone on for a long time. And I was talking about this on my Outkick the Show yesterday. Some people say, well, why have you talked about this? Because I think that getting back to normalcy in sports is an important window into getting back to normalcy in American life. And so given the fact that hopefully everybody who is in particular risk here of an elderly nature is rapidly being vaccinated, younger people are not, certainly kids are not in any real way, in danger. And so I think we should be able to have full stadiums sooner rather than later. But credit to the WWE. Thanks to President Nick Khan, who is my former agent at CAA and who is now running WWE underneath Vince McMahon, and he does a fantastic job there. And so I think it's going to be interesting to see how going forward the WWE events are all set out and the crowds. But it was awesome to see all these wrestlers being able to play it up to the crowd and have everybody back in the stadium to be able to watch that event. So we had an awesome time down there. Bunch of storylines that we've been tracking throughout the course of the show. Encourage you to go download the podcast. Make sure you don't miss a single minute. My buddy Chad Withrow from the Outkick 360 was on with us in the first hour of the program. Second hour, John McClain was with us from the Houston Chronicle. He's been covering the NFL for 45 years. And obviously a big story that is out there is Julian Edelman deciding to retire. And I think it was pretty cool the way that he announced his retirement. On the screen, it says Foxborough forever. And in fact, Dub, let's play maybe a minute or so of that Julian Edelman announcement here in the top of the third hour to let people hear that in the event they didn't see it on Monday evening, as he basically announces that his mind is willing, but his body is no longer willing, and he's not going to be able to continue. So here is that.
Nothing in my career has ever come easy. And no surprise, this isn't going to be easy either. Now, I've always said, I'm going to go until the wheels come off. And they finally have fallen off. due to an injury last year. I'll be making my official announcement of my retirement from football. It was a hard decision, but the right decision for me and my family. And I'm honored and so proud to be retiring a Patriot. There are a million people I have to thank. Mr. Kraft, the Kraft family. Learned so much from you guys on and off the field. Coach Belichick, giving me my opportunity. I always love you for that. My teammates, gone to war. We've lost some, we've won some. You guys will always be my brothers. To all my coaches that I played under, I appreciate all your insight, all your hard work, all your knowledge. To the entire Patriots organization, from the meal ladies, to the people that clean up after us, to the people in the hallways, the training staff, the strength staff. We share so many awesome memories that I'll never forget. And of course, my family. You guys have always had my back. It's been the best 12 years of my life. It's a hell of a run. And I can't forget you, Patriot Nation. You guys have welcomed me and my family to a region we do not know. We didn't know. But now, I'm one of you. I'm going to leave you guys with two words. Foxborough, forever.
So Julian Edelman announcing his retirement. I understand if some of you are skeptical out there and you think, hey, it's April. What if he's able to get himself back healthier by September? Tom Brady calls. Is there any possibility that he could go down to Tampa Bay and rejoin Gronk and the crew? It's an interesting question. If his body were able to, I think he would love to do that. This is a warrior. But I would say this about Gronk. I would say this about Edelman. We asked the question, how do you balance a career? Because to me, Julian Edelman is one of the greatest postseason performers in NFL history. He is, in fact, second most all-time in both catches and receiving yard the NFL season behind Jerry Rice. And I asked a straightforward question. A lot of people hopped on it on Monday night. I said, is Julian Edelman a Hall of Famer? And 69% of you said that he is not a Hall of Famer. And so to me, the Julian Edelman, is he or is he not a Hall of Famer, basically comes down to what sort of relevancy and weight do you put on a postseason dominant career, which is what Julian Edelman had, including a Super Bowl 53 MVP, versus a regular season career? And how do you assess that in terms of figuring out whether or not a guy is a Hall of Fame level player? And so I think in the postseason, Julian, if you were just ranking players based on their postseason careers, Julian Edelman's a Hall of Famer. If you're just ranking people based on their regular season careers, Julian Edelman is not a Hall of Famer. So when you combine those two, how do you do it? I think he's probably going to come up a little bit short, and I think one reason, ironically, is going to be because of how good Tom Brady is. Because I think a lot of people are going to say Tom Brady made Julian Edelman the quality of player that he was. And that's what makes Brady's excellence so much more glistening to me, is that if you go back and look at the New England Patriot dynasty, which I think it's fair to say is over now, I don't think Cam Newton is going to have some sort of extension of the New England Patriot dynasty without Gronk, without Edelman, without Randy Moss back in the day. This team has had to be remade several different times, but I think the dynasty in New England is over. And so if you are out there looking at Tom Brady's career, I think one of the most remarkable things about his career is there's only two surefire Hall of Famers that he ever threw passes to in New England: Randy Moss and Rob Gronkowski. That's it. Can make an argument for Wes Welker. Can make an argument for Julian Edelman. Nobody else is really in that stratosphere. No running back. is ever really been dominant enough that you would even consider them as a potential Hall of Famer. And so you look at what Brady accomplished in New England. You look at the dynasty that he created. There's no incredible offensive talent that surrounds him that was synonymous with his dominance. And that's pretty crazy. It doesn't happen very often in the world of the NFL. So taking Julian Edelman at his word, as you just heard from the Hall of Fame announcement that we played there, his career is over. I think he's the Hall of Very Good, unlikely to reach the Hall of Fame because I think the balancing act, regular season, his numbers were not impressive enough. Postseason, wildly impressive, but not quite enough to get him there. Also, other stories that are out there. And we talked about this a little bit at the top of hour two, if you want to hear me putting on my lawyer hat to discuss it. Britt Reed, the son of Andy Reed, former assistant coach of the Kansas City Chiefs, has been charged with felony DUI in regards to the traffic accident that he had that has severely injured a five-year-old girl. That traffic accident happened on February 4th. Britt Reed was reportedly driving in excess of 80 miles an hour, right around 85 miles an hour, and he had a blood alcohol level of 0.113. So he has been called, charged with felony DWI. He faces 1 to 7 years in prison for those charges. And I would say from an NFL perspective, this is a tragic story. But the connection to the NFL going forward is, I do wonder on some level whether there's going to be an aggressive investigation into where Britt Reed was drinking and if it could have been at the Kansas City Chief facility. Indeed, Dan Wetzel, who writes a great national column for Yahoo Sports, has been asking that exact question. How would you assess the Chiefs' potential culpability in Britt Reed's traffic accident that injured so severely this five-year-old girl and has led to a felony DUI charge? Where was he drinking? Could it have been at the Chiefs' facility? That is a story that may continue to grow as it pertains to the NFL involvement. And speaking of stories that continue, Deshaun Watson. Just a mess of a situation for him. You heard us talking about that a little bit with John McClain in the second hour of the program. But the Houston Texans seem to be officially saying goodbye in many ways to Deshaun Watson. They are removing him from all their marketing campaigns. I don't think he'll ever play another snap, my opinion, in Houston. And the question is, how long is he going to be out of football in general, given how much of a mess so much of this story that surrounds him is now? And so far, I have not been impressed with the legal defense that Rusty Hardin, his attorney, has brought to bear in all of these cases. So this is a big story that remains to be unpacked. I wanted to give you the latest on it. Glad to be back in the studio after taking Monday off to travel back from Tampa. Incredible time down at WrestleMania. Encourage you guys, we go to break. Petros Papadakis is going to join us. He is, as always, fantastic. Should be a lot of fun with him.
This is Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis.
Been breaking down a lot of different stories out there. One that we haven't talked about on the air, but we wrote about it, Outkick, as you hear Petros Papadakis, walk-up music, AM570 LA Sports, at The Old P on Twitter, Petros and Money Show. Many of you will hear him in the afternoon. Petros, you updated me on this story or made me aware of it. I don't know that I would have hardly even recognized it or seen it without you, that there was a homeless person inside of the USC football facilities, and that homeless person had miraculously eaten meals, hung out in the jacuzzi, and ultimately was only caught when he was returning punts. For people who may not have heard this story, because it sounds like it's not a, I mean, it sounds like such a crazy story that it couldn't possibly be real. You've gotten some details on it. What in the world happened at SC that this could even occur?
Well, first of all, the story is 100% real. I didn't have to vet the story because it was already vetted through a very reputable reporter who's been covering USC forever and was a student there and the editor of the Daily Trojan decades ago, and that guy's name is Scott Wolf, and yep. he's the guy that broke the story, and you guys properly accredited him in your article, and so it was his story. Now, Scott Wolf might not be the most popular guy among some other people that cover USC football, because Scott Wolf is kind of the opposite of a sycophant.
Right.
But that didn't make the story any less true. And it's a remarkable story. And, you know, there's a lot of different angles to it. I mean, there's a funny angle. There is a very serious angle. And then there's a more telling angle about USC and what the place is. But the really frightening thing about it, much more than a homeless guy who kind of looks like a college football player in a jacuzzi with other college football players who are five-star elite athletes, or sitting with them and eating their food, ultimately getting a helmet and a jersey and cleats and getting out there, and a number, he was number 87, out there returning punts until it finally got people enough, rankled enough, I guess, because from what I understand, I mean, there's a lot to this, Clay, but from what I understand is that he was recognized by people as not belonging there. But kind of like the end of the movie Unforgiven, where when it comes down to it, nobody knows how to shoot Clint Eastwood.
Spoiler alert!
Yeah. Sorry.
Nobody could pull the trigger, basically, and say, like, hey, please get out of here. Like, nobody could corral him because USC no longer has a director of security. That position was eliminated 3 years ago by Lynn Swan. And that guy, you know, you see that guy, he's a police detective at the Torrance Police. He would have known exactly how to handle it, or he would have had somebody handle it.
Why did they pull him down?
Why did they eliminate their security?
Yeah, why did they eliminate? Was it money? Well, just like the cost?
Lynn Swan said they weren't going to have any scandals anymore, so they didn't need him. I wish I was kidding.
Yeah, I mean, that's a crazy perspective, right?
So really, no one knew what to do, like, because they caught him sleeping in the suites at the Coliseum, which cost millions of dollars, I think $10 million, to have your whole family in there every week for a USC home game. And it's a mind-boggling situation. But the thing that disturbed me more than any of that is the fact that the cowardly Los Angeles media, I'm talking about the LA Times, the LA Daily News, these people who work at these great beacons of these places where we've gone for our news and production and all that stuff for years, and they still have many great writers, but they have not covered the story. And I knew the story was true. It was vetted by Scott Wolf. I went back and vetted it with security people that I know through USC. The story is 100% true. The guy is still at large. The search continues. They think he's still on campus. And they put some guy at the medical school, which is in East LA, the Keck Medical School, if you want to look that up for USC. They have their share of scandals. Some guy over there is in charge of the investigation.
Doesn't seem like it makes a lot of sense.
No one's reporting it except for me and Scott Wolf here in town. And then, of course, the national people, very much fueled by OutKick, the coverage. So it's a wild story, but it really is kind of a litmus test for the LA media. Like, you know, if somebody's going to cover USC football or really anything, honestly, to see whether or not they've covered this or mentioned it. Even the blind long snapper. Do you know the blind long snapper?
I saw him make a joke and, like, tweet about it.
Even Jake has acknowledged this, and he's blind. So it's an amazing story. And the more amazing part about the story to me is that USC is trying to act like it didn't happen and clearly encouraging their allies or threatening them with pulling their credential or something for for reporting it, because no one, like none of those beat writers, none of those people that have to deal with USC every day are reporting on it. And my thing is like, what the hell are you scared of? You guys treat the Lakers worse than that. Like, who cares? Like, what? Tell the story.
You know,
the more they don't tell the story, the more I want to tell it every day. You know what I'm saying? And use all these platforms.
You know what's wild? I hardly got any attention, and I don't know how this happened, but didn't USC just settle a case for like $1 billion?
Oh yeah, the
sexual assault,
the
gynecologist
on campus. That's a sore spot, you know. My whole family.
It was like $1 billion, right? I mean, I saw the headline for like a fraction of a second, and then it vanished, and I was like, "This can't be real." $1 billion.
Yeah,
I mean,
that's my era, and my wife went to school there, and my sister, and it's not cool. That's a really bad deal. And then they also have a terrible scandal with the dean of the medical school, you know, the one with the hookers and the overdose in Pasadena. Remember that guy?
Remember that story, yeah.
And then the guy that took over for him also had some sexual harassment issues. And then they just crucified a business dean who didn't deserve it at all and was well-respected and burned a bunch of bridges there. I mean, they just can't. They have a really hard time
at least
they their own way.
At least they haven't been selling admissions through fake athletic scholarships.
No, that's the thing. Like, there's been three major FBI stories with colleges in the last few years, right? Help me out here. You have Varsity Blues.
Yep.
You have the basketball thing.
Yep.
Is there another one? Maybe just two.
I mean, that's a lot for
USC's involved in all of them.
Yeah. That's like, a lot for an athletic department to be involved in multiple FBI investigations.
Well, yeah, and they had the highest-ranking person in Donna Heinel, appointed by Pat Hayden, basically in charge of all the women's sports at USC. They had the highest-ranking person busted in the Varsity Blues scandal. So, I mean, it's unfortunate. It's still a great place. I think the student body at USC is great. I think the students at USC have a lot to be proud of. It's a really hard school to get into, much harder than when I was younger. I think the faculty is excellent and always has been. And really, that's the best part of any college. That's the best you could ask for. But administratively, USC's had big problems. And it starts with a guy who was the president named Max Nikias, a fellow Greek-American, sadly. And that's a whole story for another day. But, I mean, it all just kind of, you know, if this was a story that happened at, like, let's say a really stable, considered to be stable unit, let's say it happened at Georgia, okay? I mean, this is not the first homeless guy to wander into a locker room. I mean, I know it happened at Colorado and the team beat the crap out of the guy. And there are stories, you know, all over colleges, you know, there are places where there's people just like anywhere else. But, if this happened like to Kirby Smart's team, like it would be funny. People would report on it, and the world would keep going. But because it's USC, there's such a like lineage of embarrassment after embarrassment after embarrassment. You know, dating back to the Reggie Bush thing, all the way to Lane Kiffin fired on a tarmac, Steve Sarkisian life exploding on the job. You know, the whole Ed Ogeron thing and how that didn't work out. Clay Helton's whole thing. I mean, it has been arduous. And from the end of the Pete Carroll era on, Pat Hayden and Lynn Swan, and now it just makes it look like more of a circus. You know, so it doesn't become a human interest story. It becomes a very embarrassing story, and it becomes a story that they're trying to sweep under the rug, which is making it a bigger story.
Woo, you're fired up this morning. I appreciate you coming on. It's Petros Papadakis, AM 570 LA Sports. What do you think about when's the last time you watched wrestling? I was at WrestleMania on Sunday night. Were you like a Hulk Hogan, Macho Man?
Yeah.
Guy?
I sent it's funny, my cousin Mark Pappas, who's a clerk down in the docks and was a really good football player. I watched the Hulk Hogan versus the Ultimate Warrior, you know, that one. Whatever it was called and whatever WrestleMania that was, like we were into it. And I remember watching that at his parents' house, and the anniversary was just the other day, so I tweeted, I sent him a tweet of the acknowledgement to the anniversary, and we had a good laugh. I would say that was about the last big wrestling match I was ever interested in. I've been around wrestlers through work and stuff like that, and I know it's a really lucrative thing for Fox. The interesting thing about wrestling, you know, if you have that contract, as opposed to like the NFL or the NBA, like you don't hire the announcers and like say, okay, we're going to have Rob Stone and Bob Stoops and Brady Quinn sitting at the desk. No.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah.
They just hand you a tape and you put it in and you push play. Like they take care of it. But like one of the big wrestling production guys was one of the guys that produced a lot of my games this year at Fox, because he was in studio and very capable and a lot of fun to work with, a guy named Brad Weimer. And he's really into it and knows all about it and like the modern stuff. But, you know, to me, it's like after the Junkyard Dog, you know, where are you going to go from there? After Coco Beware and the Big Boss Man, you know, come on.
I was a huge wrestling fan as a kid growing up, and it's one of those things that I've gotten back into because of my kids, because they were interested in it. So I was like, oh, this is something I'll watch. And baseball, honestly, is one of those things too, because your kids, you get to see being a fan through their eyes again, which is just so much fun. And the same thing was true for me for wrestling. Like baseball in our house every night now, we've got an Atlanta Braves game on. And so baseball is, and I know you obviously, the Dodgers are on AM 570. Baseball is one of those things where there's a rhythm to it. You know, the game's constantly always going on. You can get used to it. You don't have to really check and be like, hey, are they playing tonight? Like the answer is pretty much every night. And that's kind of fun in the same way wrestling is.
Yeah, it's, I mean, it's the guys are great athletes, and I don't know if they're actually competing against each other, but they've certainly competed.
You probably would have been a good wrestler.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's kind of like a dance, you know, and obviously a performer.
But you've got a good voice, and you're a performer, and you could have played up the Greek angle.
Look, there's nothing like you could go down a hole for hours just watching the Macho Man and Mean Gene interviews on
YouTube. It's amazing. Yes.
And just seeing how coked up Randy Savage is, just going crazy on camera.
Yes.
And it's awesome. You know, and we put Ted DiBiase on the show all the time, on our show, because he's a local missionary working with homeless, and we have a huge homeless problem.
I didn't know.
Yeah.
I didn't know that. I mean, I knew that there was a homeless problem in L.A. I had no idea. Yeah, the Million Dollar Man now is in like works with homeless people.
Yeah, he's like a preacher, and he worked with the Dream Center, you know, in conjunction with Justin Turner and the people there in Hollywood. And God knows we need help. And but you know, so we don't act like we're above wrestling, but I just always go back to the golden age of wrestling, which they call it, which is Million Dollar Man, Andre the Giant, Ricky the Dragon Steamboat. I saw your wife's T-shirt.
Yeah,
the Superfly Snuka. I played football with some of his relatives, you know, that kind of stuff. It's a lot of fun. I'm not a snob about it, but I don't know how The Miz is going to be any cooler. And my, you know, no one can be cooler than Shawn Michaels and Marty Giannetti as the Rockers. Woo! You know,
yeah, I mean, I remember the Rockers
or the Bushwhackers.
Axe and Smash from the Demolition Men. Remember those guys?
I do. And then, of course, you know,
the
Legion of Doom.
And then you had the Hart Foundation with Jim the Anvil Neidhart and Bret the Hitman Hart.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Ken Raper. You know,
British Bulldogs. You remember the British Bulldogs and Matilda?
Yeah. But you also got to respect the mid-card jobbers too. You know, like the guys who just got pummeled on a Saturday morning, like, you know, Ken Raper.
Yeah.
The guys like, you know, in a singlet just gets demolished by somebody, you know, like the Brooklyn Brawler just comes out and kicks his nuts off. Those were the days, but I'm glad you had a good time with the kids. Who do the kids like? The Undertaker?
Yeah, the kids didn't actually go. It was Laura and I.
I thought you were seeing it through your kids' eyes and all. What was all that BS?
Well, we were, but not WrestleMania itself. Not WrestleMania itself. Not this particular incident.
Child's eye. Yeah.
Yeah, no, I was there as a I was there as an adult. My wife is in love, by the way, with Roman Reigns, so it's good for me.
That's kind of creepy.
Yeah, well, you know, Roman Reigns played football at Georgia Tech.
You know, my wife has a big crush on Kamala, the Ugandan giant.
I just will say this, like when he was walking down the aisle to get in, she was like, she was like, hey, get out of the way. I want to make sure I get a good picture of him. So, yeah, that's impressive.
Yeah. I mean, I'm glad that you're so comfortable in your masculinity that it's no big deal.
Yes.
If she wants to go over there and, you know, some child wrestler, guy's probably like 25 years old. You know.
I think he's 35. But he's
looked him up.
Well, I was curious because we had him on the radio show a couple weeks ago, it's probably been whenever the last big event. It may have been 6 months ago. I don't remember exactly, but I did research on.
You made it
before we had him
it.
On the show. No, I didn't know that she thought he was awesome until. But no, I looked him up because I was like. I had heard a rumor prior to that. I mean, and I looked it up. I mean, I just looked at his Wikipedia page that he had played college football. And so I think it was during college football season. And I was like, hey, you know, as a Georgia Tech guy, how much do you hate Georgia? And that got him fired up right off the top. He's like, oh, I hate Georgia, you know, which is, you know, as you can well imagine, if you had to be in that spot of Georgia Tech where you're constantly overshadowed by the Georgia Bulldogs in that market, even in Atlanta, your home city. It's pretty interesting.
Yeah. You know, at least they don't have a homeless punt returner.
That's true. That is a very big positive. You want to come back and finish off the show with us?
Yeah.
I mean, dreaming of it. I mean, you're already up.
I just wanted to say, you know, my radio partner, Matt Smith, said it best. You know, this homeless guy is pretty tough. He sleeps outside and he eats trash. So
we'll bring back Petros Papadakis, close out the Tuesday edition of the show.
This is Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis.
Hey, it's me, Rob Parker. Check out my weekly MLB podcast, Inside the Parker, for 22 minutes of piping hot baseball talk featuring the biggest names and newsmakers in the sport. Whether you believe in analytics or the eye test, we've got all the bases covered. New episodes drop every Thursday, so do yourself a favor and listen to Inside the Parker with Rob Parker on the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcast.
We were just talking during the break, Petros, and I didn't realize this, but you're calling high school football games right now, but you walked into a tree and nearly knocked yourself out?
Well, we talked about it on the show yesterday. I was walking, like I vigorously hike along with doing yoga.
Yep.
And I was walking.
Was this something you were doing pre-pandemic, or was this something you added?
I've always done yoga.
I know that. Yeah,
as you know. But no, I started hiking again during the pandemic.
Yep.
And I live in an area conducive to that. So and it's good for my foot and my back. So
yep.
I do it. And I was finishing up, and I was coming on the baseball field where the kids were playing, and I like wanted to take a deep breath and like remind myself that there's going to be dads that are, you know, are all geeking it. Like there's going to be people freaking out about the rules. You know how it is at a kid's baseball game.
And oh yeah.
Everybody wants their kids to do well, and you're dying inside. You want your kid to be accepted. And, you know, so those things are nerve wracking for me, just like everybody else. So I took a deep breath and like tried to like, you know, relax myself and prepare. And that's when I ran my head like straight into like a really thick tree branch. And I haven't felt like that since I played football.
You just felt like you just got your belt. I mean, you totally
blacked
were,
out. Yeah, yeah. Grabbed the fence and snapped my neck back, clicked my jaw, no mouthpiece, clearly. I should walk with one now. But and then, like, I had to go sit, like, with all the parents. And, like, I told my wife I hit my head, but I don't think she really, like, understood the gravity of what I was saying. And I sat there like, God, am I going to be able to call this game? Like, I feel like I'm going to barf, you know?
Right. Like you were concussed.
Yeah, but, you know, whatever. I took a nap, and I didn't die, so I got up, and I went and did the game in the valley. But
You know, yeah, I ran into a tree, too. That's when you were talking about this. I was at the beach. I mean, it's probably
it's
been like 7 or 8 years ago. And I also was not looking at my phone. I was in Mexico. And I was just I was walking on the beach next to my wife. And I hit it. And I went down, too. Like, I mean, I hit it so, you know, like full speed, like right in the directly in the head. And what's so shocking about it is, it's so unexpected, right? So when you're talking about how, like, you just have no idea how it happened, right? And the next thing you know, you're just kind of, like, laying there, like, what in the world happened, right? Like, totally out of it.
Yeah, it was humiliating. And yeah. I felt like a jackass. But, you know, walking is one of the things I've taken up during the pandemic. And looks like now that, you know, even California is opening up a bit, I'm going to keep it going.
Do you think that anybody who's listening to us right now is surprised in any way that both of us have walked into tree branches and nearly knocked ourselves out?
No. I mean, I once rolled up my own head in my own car window. So, I mean, no one's surprised that I'm a mess of a person. But you, on the other hand, with your law degree and your fancy website and vacation homes and wrestling tickets, that's a different story.
Next week we need to talk. Do you ever sleepwalk?
No. I get so woken I up am all a... night. I mean, I run around and scream at my children in the middle of the night and, you know, start when they wake me up and won't go to sleep. Yeah.
Dub, remind me of this because we're about to finish the show. I am... So walking into a tree branch is kind of a ridiculous thing to do. Being an adult who still sleepwalks is also a ridiculous thing to do. So, Dub, every now and then we talk with Petros, and I'm like, oh, I'm going to bring this up next time. Remind me, Dub, like jot
it's
down a note, Petros, you too. Yeah, it's really a weird thing to do.
It's scary. It's like you live with a ghost when somebody sleepwalks. It's, you know, even if it's a child or any whoever it is, it's like you're living with a ghost.
Yeah, it is absolutely and utterly ridiculous. So, so we will we'll talk about that next week. In the meantime, Dodgers, what does it feel like? Does it feel back to normal for you now that there are fans present?
They won't let us into the stadium to do the show.
They won't let you do the radio show from there.
No, I'm sure they will at some point. But get more and more people in there. They're certainly charging a lot of money to get people in there. Like, they rolled the season tickets over, and then they charge you like $300 or something. Or it's like $100 for tickets in the for one ticket in the reserve section. So they're trying to make some money back. But man, people are geeked up to be in there. And I know my dad went to a game. Ronnie Fascio, our engineer, went to a game. So people are getting back in the stadium, and the Dodgers are really good, taking on the Rockies today. And then they have a big showdown with the Padres coming up this weekend that everybody's looking forward to.
That is Petros Papadakis, AM 570 LA Sports. Encourage you to go download the podcast. Make sure you don't miss a single moment. You can search out my name, Clay Travis. You can search out Outkick. Go give us 5 stars. Danny G is going to read some of them this week. This is Outkick on Fox Sports Radio.